We are in the book of Numbers again. Okay, it's going to be the 12th and 13th chapter. I was going to try to get the 15th one in there, and I said, well, I don't think I could do that today. So I need a reader.
Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting. So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle, and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward. Then he said, now hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So Aaron said to Moses, O my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us, in which we have done foolishly and in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one dead, whose flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, please hear her, O God, I pray. And the Lord said to Moses, if her father had put spit in her face, would she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterward she may be received again. So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the children of Israel. Now these were the names from the tribe of Reuben: Shammua, the son of Zakur; from the tribe of Simeon, Saphath, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodai; from the tribe of Joseph, that is, from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadai, the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Germiali; from the tribe of Asher, Sethur, the son of Michal; from the tribe of Naphtali, Naabi, the son of Vophsi; from the tribe of Gad, Gerul, the son of Machai. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hosea, the son of Nun, Joshua. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said to them, go up this way into the south, and go up to the mountains, and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage, and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season, the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron, Ahimah, Shishai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But the man who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land, though which we have gone as spies, is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight."
A few interesting things that happened in these two chapters. What is your input on the first chapter? That is chapter 12. What did you think was going on? What occurred?
They're putting down Moses.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, they were, they were mocking Moses, because
mocking
they didn't believe. Well,
Moses, okay. Any other?
They were questioning his authority in the beginning.
They were judging Moses. Judging and jealous of Moses.
Judging and jealous of Moses. Okay. Any other comments? She said it was interesting that the Lord heard them. He must have keen hearing. What was their complaint? Married a what? A fallen? Foreign, okay. Some of your translations will have it as a Cushite rather than Ethiopian. In true grammar, it is a Cushite. And in Scripture, the Cushite, it says there, I forgot where it's at right offhand, but can a Cushite change the color of the skin? No, they can't. Any more than a leopard could change the color of their skin. So it was definitely an Ethiopian or a Cushite. A Cushite, remember, Cush is south of what country? Today. Egypt. And what's that country called today? Sudan. Sudan? Something like that. Yeah. So that's the land of the Cush. Now, the other nation of Egypt is farthest, Ethiopia is farthest south and to, I think, the east. But so when you think of Ethiopian in the Bible, don't think of the Ethiopian country that you are thinking of today that you find written on the map. It's the country that's just below Egypt. Because it really should be called Cush. Now, who is Cush? Anybody remember who Cush was? Okay. Is it what? It's one of Noah's great-grandsons. And he fathered an individual. Who did he father? Nimrod. Now, what does Cush mean in plain English? We use it every day when things are in turmoil. It means chaos. Things are not in order. They're out of order, deliberately twisting and changing the pattern. And so we have, and so Nimrod came from chaos, or actually from someone who was disrupting the order of events that were taking place. The simplicity of the name, the meaning of the name. So if they were complaining, or they were murmuring, or they were spoke against Moses because of the Cush lady, what was God upset about? Was that it? They said something else. Remember they said, has not Yahweh indeed spoken only to Moses? Has he not also speaking also by us? Well, yes, he did. He did speak through both of them. I mean, especially Aaron. We know that's pretty prominent. And we know that Miriam was obviously being used by God in many, many places. And now my question to you, if you can give me an answer. There was a curse. Why was there a curse on Miriam but not upon Aaron?
Because she identified the secret relationship that Moses had. This is just a theory brought from the oral tradition that the Cushite woman was actually a secret relationship with Moses. Miriam found out about it, and she spoke against it, brought it to Aaron, and because Tzaras, or leprosy, is actually a disease of speaking ill of someone, that she was instigator and therefore afflicted. Only.
I didn't hear about him being secretly married, but secretly having a relationship. But go ahead. You.
My theory is that it goes to something you spoke about earlier, where a lot of times when God puts people in a position of leadership, he will not necessarily directly punish that person. He may make a point by punishing someone, and I've used the word punishing in quotes, someone close to them. So like you mentioned, like with King David, when he committed his great sin with Bathsheba, he didn't kill David or Bathsheba. He killed the child that they had born in adultery. And so in some ways, Aaron is the worst one here in the sense that he's the high priest.
Right.
And so, but rather than attacking Aaron directly and giving him leprosy, by giving Miriam leprosy, he got the point because he's the one that pleaded with Moses to heal her. Because in a sense, he was really punishing Aaron by inflicting that on Miriam, because now he learned his lesson.
Because Aaron's the one that asks to be forgiven.
Yeah.
That they would not be upon them. Yes. Ellie.
I don't see it here that God was upset about the Ethiopian woman. It
no.
doesn't say that. It doesn't say that God was upset with Moses. And it doesn't say that God was upset with Aaron. So why can't it be the fact that Miriam was out of line and God said, don't do that, and she got back in line and so did everybody else?
Yeah, well, actually, yes, he was upset with
Miriam. But he didn't punish her.
Miriam is the first one being mentioned in this. Ooh. Miriam is the first name that comes out of this what Eliot is trying to bring across here from her point of view. Miriam is the first one being mentioned, not Aaron. And so when they were all three together, Miriam, Aaron, and Moses, the issue was about a woman. All right? And I'm not saying to you that this is probably the case. I'm only paying attention to the order of events and the names that showed up first. Generally, when a first name shows up, that's the instigator of it or the one who is bringing forth the complaint. That's just a way of looking at things. It's not necessarily true, but as we're trying to understand about God, why he did it to her and not to Aaron. And Aaron did not want the curse to be upon either one of them, and neither did Moses. Moses wanted it removed as well, as quickly as possible. Another comment?
Well, it's just that at first he says, and then Miriam and Aaron, and then in verse 4 and 5 he says, Aaron and Miriam, instead of Miriam and Aaron.
Right.
So it sounds like everybody was in trouble, but God picks how to make points. And sometimes it's not how we would like for him to make a point.
Well, I can see why God now. See, verse 5 says, and God called them. Now, he's naming the first person there. It would be Aaron, right? And the second one was Miriam, right? I can understand why he would call forth. Now, what is the, quote, reputation of Aaron, end of quote? What is his reputation? What kind of man was he? He's what?
He spoke well.
Spoke well. And he had more. He would be the one who people would have to go to in order to settle things rather than Moses. Moses was busy running the whole country, or the whole people. And Aaron was his, what prophecy, what Jesus, what God said, he is a prophet to Moses. Yes.
I'm just looking at the text here, and it says, like in verse 4, it says, and suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam. So it's Moses, Aaron, then Miriam. And then when it talks about in verse 5, it says, then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud, stood at the doorway of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam. So Aaron is always called first here. I don't see where Miriam was called first. The only thing I see first is that Miriam was the one
I'm looking at the very first sentence. That's all. I'm not talking about the calling.
Yeah.
He said, I'm looking at the verse 5 when she brought out that subject matter. And yes, Aaron was the first one called, and then Miriam. The ones had to come closer. Those two had to come closer to God. Moses was at the... Now, Moses stood, they all stood here, and only two of them walked forward. And it was Aaron, and it was Miriam, and to face God. In verse... Right, well, we can have all sorts of ideas and thoughts. I'm not saying one way is right, one way is wrong. I just want to find out, because lots of times people have a hard time understanding how come Miriam and Miriam only got cursed. And why didn't Aaron get cursed?
Where it says, the Lord said, verse 2, it said, hath the Lord indeed spoken? That seemed to sound just like the snake talking to Eve.
I mean,
she was deceived too. Miriam must have been deceived too with the voice telling her, oh, well...
Well, he did say the word foolishness. That's a real Hebrew word, but in translation, and it says, we have spoken foolishly, stupidly, not thinking. It just kept, out it came. And so their complaint was, why have you married this Cush lady? That was their complaint. All right? And it's kind of like saying, okay, if you have something against your brother, physical brother, and he married somebody you don't like, is it any of your business? See, the issue was marrying somebody. Not that Moses was not being led by God or talked to God or to God. They also said, hey, wait a minute now. Look at his position, what he's done. He now married a Cushite. Now, hey, has not God dealt with us too? Had not talked with us too? Why is he only picking, why Moses is the number one? Well, because at the very beginning, God is like, I'll make you Elohim, and I'll make Aaron a prophet. Never said what he's going to do with Miriam. He never put Miriam down there as anything. But what was the most key important thing in Miriam's life?
Saving Moses'
life. She must have been, I think they figured around 8 years old when she was there pushing this and making sure that the little ark, I guess you might call it, was in a certain specific location in order that the daughter of Pharaoh would actually pick her up. We won't go back on history to find out why, but that's not what's important. Anyway, he said something very powerful. He said, now, wait a minute, now, I am going to speak mouth to mouth. Okay? If I'm going to call a prophet, I'm going to speak to them differently, but not with Moses. And one more thing he said. And verse, I think it's 8, is it right here? He says, I'll speak, actually it's Hebrew, mouth to mouth, not face to face, mouth to mouth communication. And he says, and not in dark speeches, but in, and he read it correctly, in the actual form and image and likeness. Now that's pretty powerful. But Aaron did not speak to God in form or in likeness or in appearance. Neither did Miriam. So when we're at this particular point in time, why was God upset?
They were
questioning God on this issue. Why? You've spoken to us too. No, I have not. Mouth to mouth I speak to him, and I don't speak in darkness to him. I speak very clearly to him, telling him precisely what I am thinking, what I am doing. And there is no ands, ifs, or buts. There's no analogy. There's no parable. There's no anything. I speak bluntly to him exactly what's in my mind. Yes.
I would guess that one of the reasons that this is in here is because before we got to the promised land, we complained 10 times, and God really got mad. And so he said, you're stuck out there for 40 years. God doesn't like complaining.
Now, it's fascinating to know that was for 7 days. And then we enter the next chapter. Now, see, they couldn't leave until those 7 days were finished. Once the 7 days were finished, the cloud moved. All right? Now, if you were Miriam, right? Now, listen, she was not just a lady. She was a very vital, very important, very, very well-known and respected and honored. She wasn't just an idiot woman. She was highly respected. If anything, that's the worst thing we find about her, right? That's the worst thing you find about her is that particular incident. God's not condemning her, judging her, or damning her anyplace else, right? No curse upon her anyplace else, right? And with Aaron, how many times did he was mad at Aaron? Once. They learned their lesson. They stopped. And she stopped. Now, later on, in the book of Numbers, there are certain men didn't stop and cost them their lives, but that's a different story. And it should have been a warning to those that were going to complain against Aaron as being the high priest, I'm going to kill you. And it should have been a warning to those who were challenging Moses as leadership, I'm going to kill you. But they didn't get the message. They didn't quite get the message at all. Now, what is it there for us to learn? What is it there for our admonition? What is it there for our understanding? What is it we're supposed to do? I don't think my name's written there.
it's a furred name.
It doesn't mean anything to God. Oh, anyway. So what is it telling us?
Do what's in front of you and don't worry about what other people are doing and complaining about it. If God is really God, if He's really there, He is perfectly capable of taking care of what other people do. Do what you're supposed to do and mind your own business.
What else have you learned? Well, stop and think for just a moment. We're talking Moses here.
Sometimes, if you're repentant, he does remove his hand. Because he did. And actually, I was kind of looking at this. And, you know, when Aaron asks,
yeah,
he doesn't. Maybe the leprosy was just an apt punishment for her. Maybe it wouldn't have affected Aaron the same way. Maybe that's why God did it for her. Because Aaron, when he says what he says, he takes responsibility for the sin himself also. Maybe he saw what happened to her and was thinking, oh no, I have to wait for mine.
That could be. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't think of himself. That's probably obvious because he said, do not hold this foolishness against us. And using the plurality of that verb us, I mean pronoun of us, meaning himself and his sister, his older sister. Remember, she was older than he was. Aaron is only 3 years older than Moses, and here Miriam was much older, and making sure that Moses was taken from the Nile to into the hands of Pharaoh's daughter. Chapter 13. Oh, in a statement?
One question. On verse 14, if you could give us some kind of idea about what did that mean, that the Lord said, if her father had but spit in her face? I mean, I don't recall any scriptures about being spit.
That's the first time I've seen it, too.
Oh.
Okay. I'll be honest, it's the first time I've seen it, too. I'll tell you what, if a daughter, or even a son, but, you know, especially a daughter, spits in his father's face, it's not a death sentence. But, look out, daughter, you're in trouble now. Stop and think for just a minute, you know. Don't raise your hands, ladies. How many times have you been mad at your dad and hated him, conspired because he made you do something you didn't like? Don't raise your hand. Don't say nothing. Just accept. Okay, he didn't. Maybe I had to do that. He made me to do this. I wanted to do that. He would not. I'm mad at him. And you go to your room and ball and pout or get mad or whatever you do. You know, we do that, you know. That's not just women, by the way. Men do the same thing. They grow up. They protest against their dad because dad's a, oh, wow. You know, I grant you, spitting in the face is kind of a pretty powerful statement, but I can't picture anybody spitting. I've seen men spit in people's face. But I've never known a woman spitting. I've never known a woman spit in the face, but it may have happened before. Oh, the other way around? Oh, I'm sorry, was that the way around? Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. That's right. If she is spit in his face, okay. Still way around. I'm sorry. Read it wrong. Okay. Next chapter. In the opening statement, now in the book of Numbers, it doesn't tell you, but in the book of Deuteronomy, it tells you the people would want the spies to go, not Moses. And Moses explains that in the book of Deuteronomy. I find that very interesting. In the book of Numbers, the first chapter, who was the one who named who was going to be the leader of the tribes? Remember? It was God who was the one and said, Moses picked that one for that tribe, that one for that tribe, that one for that tribe, that one. But this one here, not so. This one here, not so. He just told, by the way, tribe, get one from each one of the tribe, of each one of the children, and to Moses, this is what I want you to do. Send them out. So we have certain men, and they're different than the names in the first chapter, right? Remember, the first chapter was the leaders of each tribe. This one is not necessarily a leader in the sense of they rule the tribe. They were only there for one reason. And then they wanted to go out and search what was happening. Now, we could look at it and we could say, well, it's the people that did it. Now, I find this very fascinating, though. I don't quite think that's necessarily true. I'll tell you why. Because this particular chapter is when it goes to 40 years of trial. And when they crossed over into the land of Israel, or Canaanite land, God says, I have done this deliberately for 40 years to test you out whether or not you will hear and obey. So when we start here, was it kind of like, wasn't God's plan? Or was it God's plan? We have to put ourselves where God is in charge and not the people rebelling. Because when they start rebelling, God gets pretty nasty. He starts wiping them out. All right? Send the plague, you know. So it's not that issue. It's like saying, okay. It's almost like he encouraged them to go out and check on the land. Now, Moses was giving them specific instructions. Remember the instructions he gave them? He told them which way to go. Verse 17. Start in the south and head up to the mountain. And see the land, whether it is, and the people that dwell there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. So they're given four basic assignments right there, right? Four things you're supposed to check out on. Now, we come into this one, and it says, and, verse 19 now, he expands it, and what the land is that they dwell in. So first one is about the people. Four things, just check out on the people. Now it's the land. He says to them, now on this one, the land, I want you to see what the land is that they, the people, dwell in, whether it be good or whether it be bad. You remember that word bad? Ora'a. And many of you know where that comes from, right? Where's the first time it shows up in the book? Genesis. In the knowledge of good and bad. This is not the word for evil. We'll get into whether they use a different word here, which some of the translation has an evil report. That's closer to a different type of word, but it's not the word bad. All right. So now we go into this one. And he says, but the cities that they dwell in, look at the cities, and the tents or the strongholds, okay? Verse 20, and the land, whether it is, be fat or lean, whether it be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring the fruit of the land. Now the times was the time of the first grape. Now, I'm not an agricultural person. What time do grapes, when they're ripe on the vine, what time of the year is it? It's in the fall time. Now, I remember Miriam was, they couldn't move for 7 days because Miriam was, okay, and they couldn't leave that when they went to this place in the first place. It was in the first part of the year. And they stayed there for a long time. Now they're at a point where he had them move. Remember the 10th chapter? Talking about how them now pick up the tent and move. Start moving, start moving, start moving. Okay? So I find it, I'm not saying this how it happened. I think it's very fascinating of them by itself. That they entered in the land in the fall time. That is, the spies did. Which would make it the last season. Three seasons, right? The season of the ingathering, the last one. I do not know whether it was the beginning of the new seasoning or just prior to the new season, because bitterly you harvest your grapes prior to going to the Feast of Tabernacles, because you already have to have them by the time you get there. So it's probably a few days or maybe a few months earlier. I do not know. Yes. You down there with the mic.
Yeah.
Jeff.
It could be a time period what they call veraison, which is when grapes turn color for the red
it
grapes.
Could be.
They turn
starting.
From green and they start getting color to them.
It could
so
be.
They start
like
looking,
at the very
looking
beginning
like
of
they're
it.
Getting ready.
It's the rough sheet of it, the beginning of it. It's not ready. They're not at full ripeness yet, but they're heading that direction. Very well. So, we're at this particular point in time, and so we know it's not in springtime. It's not in summertime. It could be later part of summertime, and perhaps the beginning of the fall season. All right? Or pretty close to that period of time. Now, verse 21... It says here, so they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin, which means flat, and to Rehoboth, which means broad space. And the men came to Harmat, which means forest. So they were actually doing exactly what Moses did. Whether it be fat or whether it be lean, whether it be wood or basically forest or not, and whether it be of good courage or bring back the fruit. And they did. So they went to the areas exactly where Moses was told, and they told Moses told them to go. And they ascended into the south. They came into Hebron. I find this very fascinating. Remember what Hebron means? Remember what Hebron means? Oh, Hebron. Well, back in Abraham's time. Okay. The reason why it's named Hebron, because it means association. When you go back, when Hebron first showed up in scriptures there in the book of Genesis, it's when he had to go to war. You remember he had to go to war? He had an agreement with two other armies. They were kind of like allies. And the three armies, there were two brothers, plus Aaron, and plus Abraham, went to war and defeated the enemy from that point. And then it says he went all up to Dan and so on and so forth. They kicked him out of the country, basically. And some point said they moved him all the way over across the other side of the river of Euphrates River, drove him that far away with where they were supposed to be in the first place. And And so it's kind of interesting. Now, the very interesting thing here, that latter part of it, now Hebron was built 7 years before another place called Zoan in Egypt. That's an interesting word. Now, it says 7 years. So I don't have an idea of exactly when Hebron was made or formed. It was formed during the time of Abraham. Then it's quite an old city. And so is this one. But this city has a very interesting name. It means the place of departure. And when you start looking this word up, and it says in the book of Psalms, you go with a very fat day one. I'm just going to read part of it here. Psalms, the 78th chapter, verse 12. Marvelous things did he, meaning Yahuwah, in the sight of their fathers in the land of Egypt in the field of Zoan. So all when we read what took place there in the plagues, they saw it happening in the field. They took place. They saw the locusts. They saw the frogs. They saw the lice. They saw all that happening in that area. And so it was kind of interesting to pay attention to how that works. In the case of the book of Eschol, which means that's base cluster, verse 22nd verse tells you, is because they've named that brook that way, is because that's where they clustered of grapes. That's where the place that had was where they actually took the grapes. I'll drop down. And of course, and they returned, searching the land after 40 days. Now, something came up. All right? Now, they gave a report. And verse 20, let's see where I'm at. Verse 22 for a moment. And I talk about the children of Anak. Now, Anak means neck. Simplicity of the word just means the neck. But in literal translation of Hebrew, that's why they do it, because they explain it later on. It means a certain family was giants. They're tall, powerful, mighty, and powerful, muscular-built men. And where do they live? In Hebron. They lived in Hebron. So now we have down here at verse 29. He says, the Amalek, where do they dwell? In the south. Hittite and Jebusites, and Amorites, where do they dwell? In the mountains. And the Canaanites, where do they dwell? By the sea and by the coast of Jordan, that is Jordan River. So now we have kind of an idea. The big mountain area was controlled by the Hittites, the Jebusites, and Amorites. And all the south, which is called the desert today, we call it the desert. It was very prosperous those days. It was done by a people called Amalek. And the sea, both seas were controlled by the Jordan River, was where the Canaanites were, and where the coast of Jordan was. Well, Caleb, of course, tried to tell them they can go. Now, verse 32, this translation I'm using here, and they brought up, and it says, an evil report. That's an unusual Hebrew word. And it comes from a very interesting, literally means like defaming or slander, that directly it means, but the root word of it means to speak slowly. I find that fascinating. So sometimes we get a picture of them, you know, arguing, bickering, and fighting back and forth. And what they were doing, they were very careful with their words, speaking very slowly and very carefully, and giving a report that was not just incorrect, it was deliberately planned to give them a report that is opposite of what really was there. What did they bring back? They brought back evidence. What did they do with that evidence? They turned the report around to reword it and order for Moses and the people to say, we can't go there. Now, Caleb, by the way, you know what Caleb means? What?
Dog.
It's a very funny name. And the reason why it's being cut, there's two veins that can become dog, and it turned into the... And in Hebrew, it means a male prostitute in a sense. But and there's another meaning where it came from. The verb came from that which yipes. Yep, 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 yep. A dog, yappy dog, if a dog, yep, 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 yep. So I don't think he really means that he was that kind of a person. That is a male prostitute. But he was a talker. And he did an awful lot of talking. And probably, he's probably the one that really raised his voice up and yap, 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 yap. I don't know. I think it's kind of funny. Turn it around from the verb meaning to yap or to bark like a dog. You know, I find it kind of funny in that terminology. All right. Any comments? Not much to go here on this today, right? Okay. Before we call it quits. I don't know how many of you have either been told this and from childhood on up or from other sources, shall we say, that when the Israelites left Egypt, they worshipped pagans. They were pagans, and it took them a long time to get back. And we start looking at the names of the people. Now you know, because see, remember when Moses said, who am I going to tell them And he said, yeah, sure, yeah. Oh, now he went and told them that. And they said, yeah, okay, we know who he is. So they've heard that name before. Now, when you go look at some of these names, let's use for example here. In verse 7, it says, the tribe of Issachar, Egel, means he redeems, meaning God redeems. Okay? And then his father's name was, redeemed, was Joseph. We know what Joseph means, a fruitful moth. So he wasn't of the house of Joseph, that happens to be his name. And then this verse 8, very fascinating word. What is the name of the guy? Hoshua. Hoshua means deliverer. Nun. What the name Nun means? Can mean prosperity or prosperity, but means eternity, eternally. The name of Nimrod or name of Nun means something that is eternal. Unusual, odd name, but then is God eternal? Yeah, he's eternal. Now we go on down to some of these names. I'm going to pop these things up. Verse 9, it says, for the tribe of Benjamin, Palti. Palti means my deliverance. My deliverance. Verse 10, the tribe of Zebulun is Gadil. God is my fortune. And the same thing, verse 11, with Gadi again, my fortune, pray to God. And we go down to verse Dan, this Amiel, means my kinman is Elohim. They knew who God was. And his father's name, an unusual name, Gamaliel, if I pronounce that right. They translate it as a camel driver, but what does a camel do? A camel is a laborer. He carries burdens. He carries things. He's always doing something. And the word camel can also mean a foot. Your foot down there. You know, I got a foot, I got a camel, I got a camel, I got a camel, I got a camel. That's what that word can mean also. So you're carrying a load. Now, verse 15, real quickly. And it has to do with the tribe of Gad. Gaul. Majesty of Elohim, majesty of God. So they knew who God was. And regardless of what people think, remember when many of you saw the Sesame DeMille thing, right? And the thing about the calf. Okay, how many people were actually were killed biblically? 3,000. Not 3 million. Not 30 million. Not 30,000. Just 3,000. Not an awful lot. Later on, a lot more got killed by God than just 3,000. Right? For different reasons, however. Then I want you to drop down to one more word. Verse 16. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshua, the son of Nun, Yahoshua. Now, what do you think that means? Yah is a name, a short name for God. If you ever see it in Scripture, it's Yod Hey Hey. It's two Heys that are together. Yod Hey Hey. And it winds up being Yah, pronounced as Yeh or Yah. Yah saved or Yah is salvation. Now, he changed the name at this point in time. It's very fascinating because I think Moses knew something. That was the one who's going to lead. That's the one who's going to lead. Because now we look back and he says, 40 years. We're going to not enter into that promised land. And wow, what a startling thing. Because God said, I speak to Moses mouth to mouth. and I don't speak to him in dark words. I speak to him openly and bluntly. So this kind of interesting. You look back on all this time that now he names a certain individual, and that one is going to be Yah delivers, Yah saves. That's where you get the name Yahshua, by the way. Okay, comes from that formality. Any more questions?
Moses knew they would be there for 40 years.
Yeah. What we're reading here, this is what the book of Deuteronomy is not in chronological order. Okay? It's just events orders. So what we're looking at here, we're talking about these 40 days in the that's going to lead us to something. What we don't have is the book of Numbers, we'll find out, has actually stories in it that relate to the book of Judges long after his death. But it's in the book of Numbers. And so why is the book of Numbers for? Because there's events and events and events. God speaks in events and events and events, but not in time sequence. We have in our world have to live in a time sequence, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
He lives in an event sequence. Yeah. So he compares this event and that event and this event. Now I picture, and then generally the third event tells you why. This event, number one, number two, leads you right to number three. Oh, why three events for? Because it's going to tell us a story about something. Okay. Next week is chapter, 15, and maybe 16. If there's no more questions.
Clothes they didn't need, they didn't wear out, their shoes grew with them. And
I'm sorry, what?
While they were in the wilderness, their shoes grew and their clothes grew. They never needed shoes.
Right.
And their kids, you know, they're little kids, right?
They grew up.
Their shoes grew with them?
No. They would have passed them on to their kids.
Okay.
And, you know, when you got 40 years of wilderness, you know, when the old man died, they took his clothes. They didn't bury him in his clothes. They kept his clothes. They didn't grow with it.
The miracle was that the clothing,
there's nothing in the Bible says that. It just says they didn't wear out.
It didn't wear out.
It's so like the clothes, I understand what they're saying, because it's almost like this, that they were living, like flesh and blood. Flesh, you put a scar on your hand, all of a sudden, a few years later, you can't see the scar because it's healed. I know that's what they're thinking when they say that word, but it doesn't say that in Scripture-wise. Just that he just didn't have them wear out. Well, that's the power of God, not power of anything living. Right? I mean, it's living to God, yes, but I mean, the clothes were not living. The shoes were not living. People were. Yeah, right, yeah.